I'll be reading from Luke chapter 6, verses 46 through 49. Luke chapter 6, verses 46 through 49. Just to give you a little context with this particular passage, particularly in Luke, this particular parable follows almost immediately Jesus' great discourse, his great preaching on the Sermon on the Mount. So, and we did a series on the Sermon on the Mount, so you have maybe some familiarity of what was going on there. And so Jesus, a short time afterwards, is sharing this particular parable. He says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on a rock. When a flood came, the torrent struck, the torrent struck that house but could not shake it, because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed. Its destruction was complete." So just a couple of things I want to say, and then I want to give you some illustrations. Most people are driven by one or two foundational principles in their lives. Most people are. They have one or two primary foundational principles that control how they live their lives, right? And those principles are oftentimes like worldview related. Who are we? Where are we? What's wrong? How do we fix it? But most people have those principles that control their lives. They see it as being necessary for the fulfillment in life and for mankind as a whole. And they build their entire lives and everything that they love based on those foundational principles. So if you think family is important, if you think work is important, if you think material gain is important, if you think justice is important, whatever it is, if our sense of self-worth in accommodating that sense of self-worth is the most important thing in our life, then we build everything around that. But most of us do that. So they are deeply held convictions, and they have tremendous relational, physical, psychological, and spiritual applications to them. Tremendous amounts of those things are required in order for us to live by our convictions, our principles, our worldviews that we have. So, but here's the other interesting thing, that for many of us, they aren't always well articulated. So there's a sense of what we ought to live for and by, but if somebody asks us to put it into one or two sentences, we might not always be able to do that. And you might be struggling with that right now, as a matter of fact. So now, if you're a believer and you have grown in your faith and you want to mature in your faith, then oftentimes you can articulate that in one or two sentences or a paragraph, and you live according to that. Your whole life is around that. But not everyone can, or not everyone does. And, you know, I got a couple sort of wacky examples of what I mean, just sort of get your attention. But this came up on my news feed the other day. This is Angelica Canova, and she is the new human Barbie. That is a woman. And she lives in the Soviet Union, or former Soviet Union. She lives in Russia. And from day one, her parents began to treat and dress her like the American-made Barbie doll. Now, she says that she's not had any surgery or anything done to make her look like this. But this is her ideal. This is the thing that both her parents and she arrange their entire life around. Everything will be okay in this world if I can look like, if she can look like, she's thinking, like a Barbie doll. My life in this world will be good and fulfilling. The more I look like a Barbie doll, the more that will be true. So, yeah, and you probably, without trying very hard, you probably could think of other people that you know that rally around these kinds of things in this life. If only they can get that next car or that next house or that next job or whatever, everything will be fine. Everything will be good. Everything will be better. It's all about that. On the other hand, I just read some articles recently, and then it sort of showed up on a replay in Big Bang Theory, Sheldon Cooper's commitment to being transhuman. Do you know what transhuman is? Transhuman is, and you're going to think this is like, oh, who believes this? A lot of people believe this. Transhuman is the effort to find a way technologically to download your mind, your heart, your soul into a machine. So that you really can continue to live forever as an entity within this machine, and you will never die. And you think, it dominates Silicon Valley. It's so much a part of the culture in Silicon Valley where they are trying to come up with the right software and the right machine where they could actually download the human mind so that that machine, you know, as a part wears out, you just put a new part on, right? So that they can live eternally if they can figure out how to do this. And that is what they want to do. That's their work. They rally their whole lives around it. Everything is bent to this endeavor. So, to sort of jump ahead a little bit, what's really happening here is that these people, Angelica and, you know, the Sheldon Cooper wannabes in life, we would say that they are not building on a very solid foundation, right? It's kind of a foolish foundation. It doesn't really serve you very well. Well, in like manner, back then, Jesus was critiquing the current belief and practices regarding the legitimate foundation for life. In other words, there were other people who had other ideas about what that foundation ought to look like. And so he gives this parable about the wise and the foolish builders. And so initially what he's doing, as he does with many parables, is Jesus is borrowing from an everyday image. In other words, if you were walking around in Bethlehem or Nazareth or Samaria or wherever Jesus was, it would not be at all uncommon to see somebody building a house and how they would build that house. And so there were some things that people did back then that were very particular when it came to building a home that I'm going to talk about in a second. So when Jesus gave this teaching on this parable, wherever they went after hearing that parable, they would see people building houses and they would be reminded of what he was saying and how important it was to build a house on a firm foundation. But the second thing that Jesus was doing was he was correcting the religious establishment regarding what they believed to be the true foundation. But let's talk about the house first for a moment. In the house imagery that Jesus is using here, I don't know why my things didn't carry over. They're supposed to sort of like, you know, but you get the whole show right there. So anyway, when you build a house, as my parents built a house when I was growing up, it's a big investment, right? How many of you have built a house before? A lot of work, isn't it? A lot of money, and it's a huge investment in terms of your time and all those kinds of things. There's a tremendous amount of effort and initial sacrifice in order to make that happen, saving up for a down payment, Sometimes you don't want to give certain work to the contractor, so you go in and you paint the walls, right? And you do some of those kinds of things, right? And that not only that, but it's not only an investment, but it's an obvious investment. It's a public investment. People see what you're doing, right? So sometimes when you walk past or you drive past where somebody's building a house, you'll think, "Well, why are they doing that? That looks awful," right? It's public. Like, I wouldn't have done that with my house, you know? Haven't you done that before? Yeah, right? So, when you build a house, there's this obvious public investment. Your house protects things that are most precious to you. You don't buy something expensive and store it in the shed outside normally that somebody could have easy access to. But a house protects. It secures from would-be thieves and from the elements. When you build a house, you don't want to build a house. I remember when my parents built their ranch-style home, the contractor said, "Look, the original blueprint called for 2x6s for the floor joists." Now, if you've ever been in a farmhouse, you know that floor joists are 2x10s or 2x12s. And my dad had our floor joists upgraded to 2x8s. And he asked the contractor, "Why are you putting 2x6s in there?" He said, "We only build houses the last 420 years." But you and I know of houses that have been around for hundreds of years, don't we? And if you go to the Middle East, they have houses that have been built in the right way on a foundation that lasts for hundreds of years, if not 1,000 years. So when you build this house, then, you have to exercise a lot of wisdom. So not only your wisdom, not only the contractor's wisdom, but you have the state and county wisdom in terms of saying you have to meet these codes, that kind of stuff, because this is what's necessary in order to have a safe home, et cetera, et cetera. Now here in the Northeast, when we build a house, when we dig for the foundation, we want to dig down below the frost line, right? Because if you put a foundation of a house on top of the frost, like this church is on a cement slab, but the fact that it's on this huge cement slab keeps the frost line from getting underneath it and lifting it up. But if you build a single-walled foundation on top of the ground, on top of the frost line, if it gets really cold like it did this past year, then that ground lifts up, it cracks your foundation, it cracks your walls, it will dilapidate your home. Excuse me. But up in Alaska, you build your house on top of the permafrost. Because, thank you, Jim. Because in Alaska, during the summer, about 6 or 12 inches of the ground thaws. And if you don't build your foundation on top of the permafrost, which never thaws, then your house is built on top of something like soup, right? In the Middle East, the rule of thumb is you always dig down as far as you can until you hit rock. And so if that's inches, that's how far you dig down. If it's feet, you dig that far down. Because according to the research, the dirt and soil there is often described as during the summer as bronze. It's as hard as bronze. It's kind of reddish, and so it's hard as bronze in the summer, and that's when they build houses. And that's when you're tempted, like, "Hey, look, this ground is really hard. Why not just build on top of it? What's the big deal?" But during the winter, when the rains come, as the saying goes, that dirt turns into pudding. And then you got a house sliding off the side of a hill or the walls coming out from under it. And so the rule of thumb is that no matter how far down that rock is, you dig that far down until you encounter rock, and that's what you build your foundation on. And so Jesus was basically saying, look, you got to build your life. You got to build that on something solid. And if you build it on something that isn't solid, then what isn't solid will shift out from under you when times get tough. And so we all know people, don't we, whose life was not built on something solid? And when something happened, when tough times came, then what they did was their whole life, the foundation that they had in their life just shifted out from under them. When I was in Lancaster, Ohio, Anchor Hawking was a major factory there, and it was bought out by another industry. And the way that some people found out that many upper management people found out that they were no longer working, you know, it's pretty common when somebody buys you out that the upper management usually are furloughed. They're let go. They give them some kind of severance package, but they let them go, and they put their own people in there. Well, that's what they were doing here. And so it was a horrifically fascinating thing to see that many of those people who had been working for Anchor Hawking in Lancaster, Ohio, when they were bought out, when upper management showed up to go to work the next day, they came to a door that was locked, their office door that was locked, and their personal effects in a cardboard box outside the door. That's how they found out they were no longer working for Anchor Hawking. And about three of those men took their lives. And a bunch more became alcoholics. And others became abusive to their spouses and to their children. Why? Because a storm came in their life. And they had not built their life on a firm foundation. And so when that storm came, when the winds blew, when things began to wash away everything that they held dear and valued and loved, they couldn't hold up because they were not connected to that firm foundation. So Jesus begins this parable with this rhetorical question: why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? Which really... it's an important question for us to ask, because I think that for many of us who consider ourselves to believers, when it comes to the foundation, we're sort of quasi-invested, aren't we? Partially. In other words, we incorporate the things that belong to Jesus only as much as they are essential, while at the same time wanting to hang on to those things of the world that we really like, and that we don't want to give up, and that we find pleasurable. And this is really the thing that has haunted Christians for years, for decades, for centuries. This is the thing. So when Jesus was saying to his followers, right after the Sermon on the Mount, which arguably goes down in world history as some of the greatest teaching ever given by any teacher of any religion ever, he just uttered that. And then he looks at the people who are following him and say, why do you call me Lord? You're calling me your Lord. You're calling me the person who rules over your life. You're saying, Lord, Lord, on one hand, but you're really not doing what I say on the other hand. So when we think about that for our own lives, I think all of us here would say intellectually, look, we agree that Jesus ought to be our foundation on one hand. But on the other hand, we're hybrids. We're sort of amphibious. We want to live in both worlds. And Jesus is saying you can't live in both worlds. You know, there's a whole bunch more that I have, and maybe I'll come back and visit it again next week, because you'll be fascinated to know that Luke gives this particular version because of its connection to a powerful passage that was read for the call to worship that Beverly read. And so I just may come back to that next week and unpack this a bit more. But for right now, I just want to conclude this part by saying this, that when Jesus says, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I do and do not do what I say in Luke 6:46, he's basically saying, look, being a wise builder and building on a firm foundation means doing and obeying what I have said. It's what it means. Being a wise builder means obeying. It means doing what Jesus said. Jesus could say that Jesus could say in a very similar way that he said to his followers back that he could come to this very church or any church in North America and say, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord? But you do not do what I say." Reminds me of that powerful passage in the book of Revelation, the church of Laodicea, which is a church that is oftentimes compared to the church of North America. And Jesus says these words, "These are the words of the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the ruler of God's creation. I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were either one or the other. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth. You say, 'I am rich, I have acquired wealth, and do not need a thing.' But you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire so that you can become rich, in white clothes so that you can wear, so that you can cover up your shameful nakedness, and salve to put on your eyes so that you can see." So some of us, I think, probably all of us in a varying degrees, live in this kind of denial about just the kind of obedience, the kind of following that we really have. That, you know, if we were to ask ourselves sort of like the salient question, does my life reflect the lordship of Jesus Christ? Does he have control over every area? Do I build my life around his commandments and his witness and his modeling? Do I build my life on that kind of a foundation? Do I orient everything that I love and possess and value based on that? Do I? Because if I don't, then Jesus could ask us the same rhetorical question that he asked his followers. Why do you call me Lord, Lord?